We begin the current daf, Masechtas Gittin, daf Ayin Aleph. We begin on the top of the Amud, where the Gemara will begin with a Amaroic statement that will relate to the halacha of our Mishnah, which spoke about this halacha of Nishtatik. If a person suddenly became ill and became mute, couldn't talk. So the Mishnah tells us halacha that if they ask him, do you want to give a get to your wife? And he shakes his head yes, then they do some type of testing to figure out that if he's really all mentally there, by asking questions which should be yes and should be no, and he shakes the appropriate shakes, then they can go ahead and write a get for his wife, even though right now he's not fully capable of designating and authorizing through speech, but he could do it through the head shaking. Now, relating to this halacha, the Gemara brings it, Amrav Kahana Amrav. It says a different halacha, and the Gemara will ask on it from our Mishnah. He says, Acherish. Acherish is a deaf mute, which he can't talk and he can't hear. But specifically, we're talking about a case where he was originally a pekech. He was a fully competent and he had all his faculties intact when he had married his wife. So therefore, his kedushin is a full-fledged biblical kedushin. Now, the Mishnah in Yevamos and Daf Beis Amud Beis teaches us that if he becomes a cheirish, a deaf mute, or he becomes mentally deranged during his marriage, he can never divorce his wife forever. The reason being is because the status that he's in right now, which is a cheirish is someone that is not considered that he has das, the fully intact intelligence. Now, moreover, his kinyanim, whether it be getting married or getting divorced, are not biblically recognized. Rabbinically, they're recognized if the kedushin and gerushin would both be in that status. But if he had a biblical kedushin, which was done with a fully intact knowledge, that type of a gerushin would not be able to be done through a cherish. So, in spite of that, Rav comes to teach us. So, though that he was married when he was a pikiach, but then during his marriage he became a cherish, Rav says that if sheyochel ledaber mitecha ksav, if he could speak through writing, in other words, he knows how to write on a piece of paper, kisvu v'tnu get la'ishti, right? He's telling this to people. He can't talk anymore because he became a deaf mute. But he's able to convey the message through writing, write and give a get to my wife, you and you. So then they actually go ahead and they give it. The reason being is because, and this is the chiddush, this is the novelty of Rav's halacha, that we do consider this cherish, although generally we don't consider him as a pikeach, but Rav says if he could still communicate through writing, then we consider him as a fully competent person, and kaisvim v'noisin get l'ishle, so we could write and give a get to his wife. That's the chiddush of Rav. On that, asks the Gemara Amar Rav Yosef, he says, my kamash malon, what is Rav teaching us that we don't already know from Tanoic sources? Tanina, we learned this halacha in our Mishnah, which was what we reference is related to the halacha of our Mishnah, that said, nishtatik, if a man was pikech, was fully competent, and then he became mute, silenced, v'amrulay, and they say to him, nichtav get le'ishtecha, should we write a get for your wife? V'hirkin b'reisha, and he shakes his head, yes. So, bait k'nesh shleshapam, so we check him out three times, im oma lav, lav, val hein, if regarding what should be answered, no, he shakes his head, no. And regarding what should be answered, yes, he shakes his head, yes. So, hare elu yichtav v'yitnu. So, our Mishnah says, so you write and then you give it. What's Rav teaching us that we don't already know from our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says, if someone can't talk, which is the same, what's the classification by this cheirish, but if he could communicate through some other medium, which Rav talks about writing it, and our Mishnah is talking about by his head shaking, that we do go ahead and give it. So what do we need Rav for if it's already in the halacha of our Mishnah? So Amli Rav Zeira, so Rav Zeira answered to Rav Yosef, he says, Ilim ka'amrit, you're talking about a mute person? Meaning you're asking from the halacha of our Mishnah that our Mishnah already says that you can write even though he's mute? Shani Elim, a mute person is different because since a mute person hears, so he's considered totally like a bekeach, a fully mentally competent person. But a cheirish that doesn't hear and doesn't talk, if he wouldn't be able to communicate through his writing and eluding it that way what he wants, then he would not be able to divorce his wife. And therefore, it says Reb Zeira, had we not had the chiddush of Rav, we would not have known this halacha, because actually the truth is, the case that Rav is discussing, a cheirish, is not a pikeach, and Elim is considered a pikeach. He's considered a regular person. Now, he just can't talk, so however he can get the message across, by shaking his head, whatever it is, he's definitely totally sane, and that's what you need from a kasam la menasim yada to be a totally sane, mentally competent person, the way he was when he got married. But a cheirish would not be. The chiddush of Rav is that even though generally a cheirish is not a pikeach, if he could still write and convey what he wants in his thoughts, that means we still consider him a pikeach. they're telling, like, learning the Braisa, that there's a fundamental difference between an Elam. An Elam is still considered a fully sane person. The Braisa says that regarding a Cheirish that is Medaber Ve'ena Shemea, which is he speaks and he doesn't hear, because sometimes the word Cheirish could be deaf mute, or the generic word Cheirish means that he's just deaf. So regarding such a person that he speaks, he just can't hear. Zeo Cheirish. So that's what we consider a Cheirish. And again, as Rashi points out, this is not the Cheirish that the Chacham always mentioned throughout Shas, that they equate a Cheirish with a Shaita. There's always Cheirish, Shaita, B'katan. And that Cheirish is someone that doesn't hear and doesn't speak. It's what's considered deaf-mute. Now, because what we're talking about over here in the Braisa is talking about someone that's fully mentally competent. And however, but as we mentioned before, the Cheirish that Rav Kahana, who said the name of Rav, he was talking about a Cheirish that doesn't hear and doesn't speak. But this Braisa is talking about one that just doesn't hear. So such a person is considered a Cheirish. Shamei ve'enim edaber, someone that hears but can't talk, zeh ilim, that's someone that's considered mute. And says the Braisa, v'zeh v'zeh harein kepikin l'chol devreim. But these two individuals, the deaf person and the mute person, are considered a fully pekiach. They could do whatever a regular person could do. Again, however, in contrast to the case of Kahana, where he's not considered pekiach, Chiddush of Rav is, but if he could write what he wants, then we do consider him pekiach. Now, the Gemara continues, from where do we know that someone that speaks but doesn't hear is what's called a cheirish, a deaf person, and shemei ve'en medaber zeh elam, and someone that hears but doesn't speak is considered an elam, which is a mute person. So the Tosafot actually says in the Pasuk in Tehillim, says, v'ani checheirish, I was like deaf, which is loy eshma, I don't hear, u'che'elam, and like a mute person, that loy yiftach piv, that doesn't open up his mouth, meaning that he cannot talk. Or ve'ibay seima, or if you want another source for the interpretation of elam as someone that doesn't talk, it's because I'm interested, like people say, ishtakel miluli. His words have been taken away from him, which is the nutrikin. It's the abbreviation in the word ilaim. Ishtakel miluli, lamremem, gets switched around. So that would be the other source, how we know that the word ilaim means someone that is mute. But again, that's why there's no question from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is talking about someone that just became silent, meaning that he's mute. That's someone that's pekech, so of course he could shake his head. Rav is talking about a whole new level of chiddush, which is a deaf mute, which is someone that is not considered like a pekech. Now, so therefore the Gemara continues, Amr Bzeirus, Rav Bzeirus says that the question that was asked before by Rav Yosef is definitely not a question. But he says, Ikashli, but if I would have a question in this halacha of Rav Kahana, Hakashli, I'll tell you what's my question. The Tanya like learned Rav Raisa. And Raisa quotes a pasuk in Vayikra, Perek Hei, Pasuk Aleph, where it says that Benefesh ki sechata, that if a person will sin, because B'shama koil Allah, he'll hear the voice of an oath, because of who ate, really he was a witness to an event. Ayrah, or he saw, ayada, or he knows, but im lo yagad, if he's not going to say, so the pasuk there concludes, v'nasa avayin, he'll have to carry his sin, because this was someone that they made him take an oath that you don't really know testimony regarding what this person had, and he really does know, so then that person is liable for a carbon shvur. Says the Braisa, that since it says im lo yagad, if he doesn't tell, prad le ilam, that excludes a mute person, meaning that he will not be liable for a carbon shvua, which is what's called a shvua se'edus. Shvua se'edus is when they make him swear that you don't know testimony, and really turns out that he really did know testimony. If this mute person swore, now how do he swear he can't talk, by shaking his head that he doesn't know, so then even though he has violated this problem about swearing falsely regarding testimony that he knew, but he's not going to be chayiv for the liability of that carbon shvua. She'en yachal hagad, the Braisa says, because he can't talk. The pasuk said, im lo yagad, if he doesn't say what he knew, but he can't talk anyway. So therefore he's not chayav the carbon shavua. That's what the Braisa says. Asks Reb Zeira, amai, why? But ha'yachal hagad mitechek sav, but he could talk through writing. In other words, if you hold the Rav Kahana's halacha, that the writing of the mute person, or even of a deaf mute person, is considered like dibur, like as if he still talks, so then, actually, the Elam, the mute person, actually should be liable. Because you're saying that he could communicate through writing. So why is it any different over here? Why wouldn't that be considered a valid Yagid that if he didn't say, because he could say it through writing. Because Rav even took it further. He said that not only is it considered talking, he said that we'll actually even consider the person as a Bekeach if he could talk through writing. Meaning we don't consider him a deaf mute that's considered that Ein Loy Das. We consider that he still talks. What do you mean he talks? He's a deaf mute. Oh, because he could write, he could still communicate through his writing. So you see that the ksiva is considered like a dibur in this regard. So then, if it's considered like Dibris, then why wouldn't the Elam be Chayiv for Karban Shavua? It should still be Imlo Yagid, because he is Yochel Hagid through writing. So Amla Abaya, Abaya answered to Rabbi Zeri, says, Eders Ka'amrit, you're referencing regarding testimony, which that's what the Pasuk there is talking about, the Abraisa, regarding Shavua's Eders. Shani Eders, testimony is different. Because yes, although let's say that the answer would be correct of Rav Kahana's Halacha, that if you can talk through writing, it's considered talking. But testimony doesn't work, because Drachman Amma Mipiyam. Because the Torah says, Al Pishnai Edim Yakum Dava, that through the mouth of the two witnesses will be the validity of their testimony. Which it says has to be from their mouth, but let me pick Savim. It can't be from the mouth of their writing, meaning they can't be testifying their testimony in Beis Din through writing, which Rashi points out a difference regarding a document, where if that was signed that day, since that the normative process in a document to do it through writing, that would be valid. But a general testimony that you have in court has to be, as the Pasuk says, Al Pishnei Edim Yakum Davar, through their mouth, and that's why. So although, yes, Dibur, Ksiva is like Dibur, writing is like talking, but testimony, that's different, because there the Torah says explicitly it has to be through their mouth, and a mute person can't talk. But Meisvi, actually, the Gemara asks from a Braisa on this interpretation of Abaya. And the Braisa is going on the case of our Mishnah, which said that if someone is nishtatik, if it becomes mute, and they ask him if he wants to divorce his wife, and he shakes his head yes. So, says the Braisa, k'shem sheboit kinois legitin, just like they inspect him regarding giving a get, like we said in our Mishnah, that we first test him to see if he's answering the right questions by his head shaking side to side, up and down, make sure he's got the yeses and the noes down, we know he's totally sane. So too, we do the same inspecting to make sure he's still all there and he knows what he's talking about regarding business dealings, meaning to sell from his assets, or the adios regarding testimony, or the Yerushas, regarding inheritance, which we're going to explain all these cases shortly. But the primary thing that the Gemara is asking from this Braisa in Abaya is, Katani Mias Idias, one thing that we see from this Braisa is, that it mentioned testimony. Meaning, we're talking about a person that was Nishtatik, became mute, he's an Elam. That it said that he could say his testimony. Now, how's he saying testimony? He can't talk. Obviously, meaning we checked him. We check him out. The point of the Braisa is that we check him out. Make sure he still knows what he's talking about. Now, okay, fine. We see that he's sane because he's answering the right questions during wintertime about summer stuff or about appropriate fruits in different seasons, whatever it is. Now, okay, so he knows what he's talking about. But how is he going to testify? He's saying, okay, he could now do his edus. He's obviously going to do it through writing because he can't talk. But you, Abaya, said that regarding testimony, it says in the pasuk mi pihem, has to be from their mouth, and this guy's mute, so that refutes your answer. Your answer was, to from Rabbi Zeri's question, was, oh, don't ask on Rav Kahana from Eidus, because Eidus is different. Yes, usually writing is like talking, but testimony has to be through words. But here we see clearly from this Braisa that an Elam could testify, even though he can't talk. So Amar Rav Yisra ben Yumi, Amar Rav Shesha says, it's not a difficulty in Abaya. This Braisa is Toma be'edus Isha, the testimony regarding allowing a woman to get remarried, in other words, that her husband had died. The rabbis were lenient regarding the testimony of a woman's remarriage because of Iguna. So actually, usually you need two witnesses. It's enough with one witness. We allow a relative. We even allow a maidservant. So since we allow leniencies, that's why we also allowed an Elam, yes, to do it through writing. But generally, testimony requires, like it always requires two witnesses, it has to be through their mouth, like Abayat said. But here it's different, because an Elam could do it, because they're talking about Eidus Isha. But the Gemara asks, but Vakutani Yerushas, another one of the cases mentioned in the Braisa was talking about inheritance. Now, the Gemara's assumption right now, and the question is that, meaning, the mute person could testify regarding some other person's inheritance, which that's a classic testimony of monetary law, which they would then fit into the category of Mipihem, but let me pick Savim, according to Abaya. How could the Elam then go ahead and say testimony? So Amr Bavoi says, no. What does the Braisa mean when it talks about inheritance? Yerushas benoi habachayr. It means regarding his own firstborn son, meaning this mute person's firstborn son. For example, as Rashi gives the case would be, if let's say, although generally the firstborn son gets a double portion, so let's say there's five sons, we would split into six parts, and he would get two parts. But let's say the father wants that, my children, I don't want to make any difference. I don't want to make machlekes. I want my even my oldest son to split the same as all the other sons. It's regarding that the Braitzer says that we inspect him to see if he knows what he's talking about by shaking his head the right way, but nothing to do with testimony. He's not testifying regarding other people's affairs. It's his own children's inheritance. Now, that's why I actually picked the case of Yerusha's Bnei HaBachar, because if it wasn't to change any of the halachas that are biblically regarding inheritance, that the firstborn usually does get a double portion, then we actually wouldn't even need his words. In other words, we wouldn't have to check him out to know if he knows what he's talking about, because inheritance would happen by itself. So even if he doesn't know what he's talking about, it doesn't make a difference. We don't need his sanity for that. But again, it has nothing to do with testimony. You're right, testimony Abai still stands correct, that for that you have to say it. Now this person is mute, so how is he having Yerusha? It means his own son's Yerusha. That's not testimony, that's just he gets to decide. And that he could do even by having being inspected in whatever way it is. And again, there's no edus over here to require it. In other words, he could do it with head shaking, he could do it with writing. There's no halach of edus for that. But the Gemara asks him the other item. Katani mias l'masayis l'matanes, but we learned about business dealings. So the Gemara asks, my lav la'alma, isn't it talking about even for the general population? In other words, where he's testifying for other people that, oh, I saw that he had sold this to that person or other things related to that, which that would be a halach of testimony, and hence, according to Abai, require words, and yet here we have an Elam doing it. So the Gemara says, no, same thing over here, loy, it's talking about l'didei, for himself. Meaning, we just verify by him, he can't talk anymore, so we have him shake his head in the right way to make sure he knows what he's talking about, to sell his own stuff. So that's not testimony. That he could do with head shaking, with writing. Again, but regarding other people, regarding testimony, yes, Abai still stands correct, that you would have to have, as that previous Braisa said, me PM, but let me pick some of them, then words that are written would not be valid, it would have to be through his mouth. But now the Gemara goes back, Meisvei, so Abaya's interpretation is good to answer from that Braisa. But the Gemara goes back to asking Rav Kahana's halacha in the name of Rav. So the Braisa says, Cheresh, a deaf mute, loy holchu bay achar mizaisa. We don't go after his gestures, the achar kifitzaisa, and after the movements of his lips, from the way he's mouthing the words, the achar ksav yadai, neither do we go after his handwriting. In other words, that although he's conveying messages through gesturing or writing, we don't consider that as to consider him a pekeach, as a fully mentally competent person. Meaning, because since he's a deaf mute, he's not considered a pekeach. Only regarding his movable items, which we mentioned in different daf, that's a rabbinic law to allow him to survive, because, okay, I'm a deaf mute, now what do? I can't sell anything, I can't have any kinyanim. So regarding his movable items, just so he could survive, for that we allowed him to be considered as he's doing kinyanim, through gesturing and writing and mouthing the words. Aval loy legitin, but not for the halachas of gitin, as Rashi explains, in other words, where if when he got married, he was a pikeach, where his kedushin was a biblical recognized kedushin, now that he's a cheresh, now he's a deaf mute, now he can't go ahead and divorce. So that refutes Rav Kahana's halacha. Because here we have clearly the case that he describes, which is a deaf mute, that could communicate what he wants through his handwritings, and yet the Braisa says clearly that it doesn't work for gitin. So the Gemara says, you're right, Tanoihi, but it's a machlokes Tanoim. The time like Linda Braisa. Omar Rabbi Shimon Begamlil. Shimon Begamlil says, when did we say this? Which we mentioned in this Braisa that we just quoted. That we don't go after the deaf mute's writing regards to halachas of Gittin. He explains, that's only Becheresh Mi'ikara. That's by a person that was always originally a deaf mute. Meaning, his handwriting never conveyed that he still has his previous intelligence, because he never had clarity in his life. Which, as Rashi points out, the Gemara is going to ask, if we're discussing a case that he was always a cheresh, so that means to say when he got married, how to get married? Not through talking, because he was always a deaf mute, it was only through gesturing. So therefore, his marriage wasn't biblically recognized, it was only rabbinic kedushin that works for cheresh, so then actually gesturing should work for his divorce too. And that the Gemara is going to answer, we're talking about actually a Yavam, which means he was always a Cheresh, but his brother is a Bekeach, and therefore the marriage that he's inheriting was biblical, and that's why his divorce of a Cheresh won't work. But that's what Shimon Gamliel says, that's when it's not going to work through writing. Aval Pekeach, but if let's say he was originally a fully competent person, where he learned to write with a clear mind, then v'nischarish, then he became a deaf mute, said, then who kaysed? Then he could write the get, the hain, and others are going to be chaisman, they're going to sign, which is exactly like Rav Kahana's halacha, because actually writing does indicate that he still is considered like a bekech, again, if he was originally a bekech. If he originally had das, so then that maintains it. If we see he could still write, that's maintaining it. But if he was always a chayrish, even if he could write, that doesn't indicate any das, because he never had it in the first place. But if you had it, then writing will still be an indication that that you're still a bekech, which was exactly Rav Kahana's halacha, name of Rav. So that's who Rav was going like. But you're right, the Tana Kama is that we quoted in the previous price, it disagrees with that halacha. Now, but the Gemara asks, now that we mentioned Reb Shimon Gamliel, who seemingly Rav is going like, asks, v'cheresh me'ikar eloi, but is it really true that if he was always a cheresh, then he can't divorce through writing? But the Gemara asks the question that we just mentioned before, but quoting a Mishnah Mesechtes Yevamos, that regarding when the cheresh marries a woman, so the Mishnah says that if he wants to divorce her, he could divorce her. Why? Isn't he just a cheresh? Because kishem shekainse b'remiza, just like he could get married through gesturing, that's how he got married in the first place, it was just a rabbinic marriage, kach metzia b'remiza, so too he could divorce her with the same quality, which is a rabbinic divorce, which is through gesturing. So if Rabbi Shimon Lil says, regarding the case that it was always a cheresh, why does he say, oh, that would be a case where writing wouldn't be an indicator of das? Fine, it's not. But he was always a cheresh, so he should also be able to divorce as a cheresh. So the Gemara answers, Ibe ishte hachanami, you're right. If it was regarding this cheresh meikar his wife, yes, he would be able to divorce through gesturing. Hachamai iskin, what we're talking about over here is be yevimtoi. We're talking about with his yevama, meaning his brother died without any children, where her kedushin to his brother was a biblical kedushin. And hence the zika bond, which is a bond that's created when a man dies without any children to all his brothers, that is a biblical halacha. And that's like some type of a marriage that's attached to all her brother-in-laws. Now the problem is, he can't do chalitza. Why can't he do chalitza? Because the pasuk says, va'amad va'amra, that he stands up and he says, lichafas lekachta, the brother-in-law says, I don't want to go ahead and take her. He can't say that, because he's a deaf mute. So therefore, what he has to do is he has to marry her. Now, but once he marries her, he cannot divorce her. Because his get, whatever cheresh gives a get, is only a rabbinic type of a get, because he doesn't have das, not biblically recognized. Hence, they can't remove the zika bond, which is he's inheriting from his brother, which is a biblical type of a marriage. So that's why, that's where Reb Shimon Gamliel says, we'll have the halacha that writing won't help, because he was always a cheresh. And he can't divorce on his rabbinic level of being considered a cheresh, because writing doesn't help, because he had always written as a cheresh, to take care of the zika bond, which is deraisa. But again, if he wasn't always a cheresh, he was a bekech, and then he became a cheresh, but he still maintains his writing, that he agrees to Rav Kahana or Merav, that then that would be considered like he's still a bekech, and then he would be able to convey his message through writing, again, not like the Tana Kama of the previous Brisa. But the Gemara clarifies this answer that we just gave to explain the halacha of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Yevimtoi miman. Who is she Yevama from? In other words, who was this brother that passed away? If you say that his brother was also a deaf mute, and he died without any children. But then, it's the same question. Just like this widow, this Yevama, got married through gesturing by his brother, so she should be able to leave this Zika, this Yibam, also through gesturing from the Yavam, because that's the same level of marriage. So El Rav, the Gemara answers, the case that we're discussing over here in this price of Shimon Gamliel is that the brother was a pikeach, hence the marriage he had with this woman was deiraisa. The zika is deiraisa, and therefore the cheresh, who the brother-in-law, who cannot do chalitza because he can't say the words which are necessary for chalitza, the only option he has is to do yibum, which all he has to do is an act of bia, which that he could do. And then once he consummates the relationship, he can't divorce her because we're talking about a marriage of deiraisa, and his divorce would only be rabbinically recognized. That's one answer. Or if you want, the Gemara says, we could actually even tell you that no, even the brother was a cheresh. If that's the case, then why shouldn't he be able to divorce her through gesturing, just like she got married through gesturing? And says the Gemara, because but that's a rabbinic decree. Because if we allowed him to do this divorcing through gesturing for his brother that was a cheresh, we might come to do it in the case of a brother that's a pikeach. And that is not recognized, and therefore we don't allow it even when the brother is a cheresh. Now, this answer the Gemara asks, Ihachi ishtei nami. Then if that's the case, then even the cheresh's own wife we should make a gzeira that he shouldn't be allowed to divorce her through gesturing, although he married her through gesturing, because you might come to allow it in the case of a yevama, which that generally is a case of full-fledged kedushin because the brother is a bekeach, so therefore it shouldn't allow to have even his own divorce of his own wife with a remes, which we said in Maseches Yevamos that it does work because he got married with remes, he could divorce through remes. So the Gemara says, no. Yevimti be yevimti michlefa. A yevama with another yevama, meaning this widow of the brother died without any children, could get mixed up with another one. So we would confuse the wife of his brother that's a bekeach with the wife of his brother that was a cherish. So that's why we said that even we could say that even if his brother was a cherish, we wouldn't allow for him to divorce her, this yevama, through remes. But ishtei beyevimtei lemechlefa, his own wife with his sister-in-law is not going to get mixed up. So therefore we can go ahead and allow this cherish to divorce his own wife through remes, and we won't come to think that then he could do the same thing for his sister-in-law, that's the yevama. But the Gemara still asks on this interpretation. Do we really make such a gzeira that we don't allow you to do remez for the brother, for the sister-in-law from his brother that was a cherish, because he might come to do it for the brother for his brother that was a bekeach? But as we continue on Tamid Beis, the Gemara asks, but Tanan, we learn the Mishnah Maseches Yevamos that seemingly contradicts this premise. The Mishnah says Shnei Achin Charoshin, if there's two brothers that are deaf mutes. So as Rashi points out in the explanation of this Mishnah, since both of these brothers are deaf-mutes, it doesn't make a difference what their wives are like. If they're fully mentally competent or not, because it doesn't make a difference. Either way, the wives are only being married through remiza, through gesturing, because the husbands, the brothers, are charoshin. So therefore, it's anyways going to be a rabbinic marriage for both of them. So therefore, whether it's Nisuin Shtei Achayis Pikchis, whether they got married to two fully competent, mentally sane sisters, or Shtei Achayis Charashas, or if the two sisters that they got married to were also deaf-mutes, or Shtei Achayis, or they got married to two sisters that Achas Bekachas V'Achas Charashas, that one was a Bekachas, one was a Charashas, doesn't make a difference. The main point is here that they got married to two sisters, and both of the marriages were only rabbinically recognized, because the husbands were both Charashim. Or the same thing goes the other way around. Let's say there's two sisters that are deaf-mutes, and therefore it doesn't make a difference regarding the sanity of their husbands, because either way, they're only getting married, these two sisters, through remiza, because they don't understand. They can't do anything but gesturing. So either way, it's going to be a rabbinic marriage. So again, it doesn't make a difference if nesuis l'shnei achin pichin, if they got married to two brothers that are pichin, that could talk in here, or l'shnei achin charashin, if the two brothers were deaf-mutes, or two brothers that echad pekech and echad cheresh, that one was a pekech, fully sane, and the other one was a deaf mute, doesn't make a difference. Either way, these two cases are talking about their both of the marriages, when you have two brothers marrying two sisters, that both of their marriages were rabbinically only recognized. Again, because either the two brothers are charoshin or the two sisters are charoshais. So therefore, harei elu peturis min achalitza umin ayibim. So the halach is going to be that when one of them dies, so the sister-in-law, who's also the sister of his wife, is going to be exempt from chalitza and from yibum, because she's considered an erva of a chayis isha. And that's the halacha in the beginning of Maseches Yevamos that discusses that the halacha of yibum doesn't apply if that sister-in-law, meaning his brother's wife, is also his wife's sister. Now, the reason being here is because they are both rabbinical status in their marriages. So that halach is going to be that his wife's sister is an erva of a chaysisha. So that exempts from the halach of chalitza yibin. There's no halach of chalitza yibin. That's if they're brothers and sisters. But, says the Mishnah, v'imhoyu nachri yais, but if let's say these two brothers married two unrelated women. Now, but let's say both of the brothers are deaf-mutes, or both of those women are deaf-mutes. But again, there's no halach over here of an erva of it's being his wife's sister. Now, one of the brothers dies. So now the second brother can't do chalitza, because he's a cherish or because she's a cherish. So if he's a cherish, he can't say the pasuk that we mentioned before. And if she's a cherish, she can't say mo'en yivami, that my brother-in-law doesn't want to take me in yibam. So because of that limitation, they can't do chalitza. So rather, yikantzu. So the yavam, what he has to do is he has to do yibam. He takes her in marriage through an act of relations. V'imratzu lahitzien. And now, if after that act, after he did yibam already with her, then he wants to divorce her because he can't divorce her through chalitza because he can't do that process because he can't say. But once he consummates that relationship, then if he wants to divorce her, then Yitzhiyu, then he could divorce her because the get of the cherish could exclude the zika of the kedushin of his brother who is also cherish. So says the Gemara, so you see that where the sister-in-law, this Yavama, fell from his brother, that's a cherish, that he could divorce her. And that we don't make gzeira that we shouldn't allow him to divorce her because of his brother. That's a pikeach where their remez doesn't work because there it's a biblical marriage. So that refutes the second answer that we gave, that it's even talking about an achav cheresh because we don't allow it because of atu achav pikeach. Here we see clearly that we do allow the brother that's a cheresh, even by his yevama, to divorce her, and we're not concerned because it's from a brother that's a cheresh who also married her through remiza, and therefore his divorce through remiza works, and we're not geyser atu achav pikeach. So ela machvarat, Rav, the Gemara says yes, it's clear kedushin mikra. We have to say like the first answer in the Gemara that we said that it's talking about that she fell from his brother that's a pikeach. That's the case of Shimon Gamliel. That's why remiz doesn't work by a cheresh miikarei, who he was always originally a cheresh. And again, that's why we said that his writing doesn't help. Now we asked, but if he was always a cheresh, then just like he marries with remiza, so too the divorce work remiza. That's why we said, no, she's yavama from his brother that was pekech. Where that marriage was deraisa, his divorce would only work rabbinically, wouldn't work for that deraisa type of a marriage. Because, again, it has to be like that answer, because actually we don't make exera because if his brother was a cherish, then actually his remiza for divorce actually would work for the zika that from the marriage that he gets from his brother that was also a cherish. So that was Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which again we brought as the source for the opinion of Rav Kana Marav. But Amar Birchin says Chalukin Olav Chaverv al Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. But the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and they hold that even if it wasn't a cherish meikara, even if he was originally a pekech and then he became a cherish, that he cannot divorce, not like Rav, meaning even if he knows how to write. Now, what Rabbi Yechon is coming to say is, but in other words, don't say, because that's the word seemingly of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that he says, b'med devam amum, as if he's qualifying and explaining the opinion of the Tanakhama, says Rabbi Yechon, no, that was his tradition that he had, that no, actually the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And it's not that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is coming to explain the Tanakhama, and as if everyone agrees to the halacha of Rav Kana Marav, rather like we said on Oman Aleph, that Rav Kana Marav's halacha is a machlokes tanoim. Now, Amabai says, afanana metanina. This idea that it's a machlokes is actually, we learned the same idea in Masechtas Yevamos. Because the Mishnah says over there, nishtatis, if the wife became mentally deranged after she got married, the halacha is lo yoitzi. So then it's forbidden for the husband to divorce her. Now, the understanding of this chiddush is that even though if a man has a fully capable wife that's a pikachas, and then during the marriage she became a deaf mute, halacha is he's allowed to divorce her. Now, although she doesn't have nidas anymore, because seemingly a cheresh is the same thing as a shaita, but although he could divorce a cheresh, because we don't need her intellect, because he could even divorce her even against her will, even without her knowledge, but when she becomes a shaita, mentally deranged, the rabbis say he's not allowed to divorce her. Because since she doesn't know how to protect herself, she totally lost it. So men are going to act inappropriate with her and in acts of znus, as we're going to explain later on this amid. So therefore, the rabbi said it's forbidden to divorce her. Now, nischarish hu ay nishtata, if the husband becomes a deaf mute, or if he becomes mentally deranged, lo yoitzi ay lamas, he can never divorce her. Because since his marriage was biblical, he was a bikach, now he's a cheresh or a shaita, so now he's not fully competent, he cannot go ahead and divorce her now to undo that marriage. Now, says the Gemara, says Abaye, Mayer Lamas, what does the Mishnah mean when it says that forever he cannot? A cheresh can never divorce his wife. Lav afagav, isn't it coming to say this idea? That even though he could still speak through writing, meaning he could still convey his ideas through writing, still says the Mishnah, like Rabbi Yechanan said, that this is the opinion of the Rabban who argued in Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that a cheresh, no, forever, he cannot go ahead and divorce. But why? Maybe if he could do it through writing? No, because they disagree in Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Even if he was a bekech, and then this cheresh, and he could still write, that's not a sign that he's still a bekech. So Amar Papa, says, no. Elav dash min Rabbi Yechanan, had we not heard this statement from Rabbi Yechanan, that he said it's a mesorah that he has, that it's a machlekes, Havamina, I would have said that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel lefrushe time of the Tanakama Hudasa, that he was actually not arguing. Everyone agrees to him, and he was qualifying b'med d'mar mumen. We say this halacha that he was explaining the opinion of the Tanakama, that everyone agrees that it's only when you were always a cheresh that then writing doesn't help. But if you were a pekech and then became a cheresh, like the case of a Kan Marav, you actually could divorce through writing, because that still indicates that you are a pekech. You're still holding on to some intelligence. Now, umay elam is then, so what does the word forever mean to say, which you're being medayik from? It's actually coming to say a different chiddush. The afagav to chazin le decharf. Even though we see that he's still sharp, he still has his edge to him, that's still being excluded, because if we become a deaf mute, we continue someone that doesn't have a das. But the truth is, says Rav Papa, if not for Rabbi Yechon, I would say that if he could talk through writing, that actually that was not excluded from this term of forever. And actually it would be like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that you actually could divorce through writing, and therefore it wouldn't be a raya like you're saying from that Mishnah. Or inami, or another interpretation, says the Gemara, what would mean this word olam is forever, that wouldn't be a raya to Rabbi Yechonon, which Abaye wanted to prove from this Mishnah, is like Rabbi Yitzchak. It actually would be coming to tell us the halach of Rabbi Yitzchak, because this term of olamis that it says in the Seifa would actually be there for the diuk. It would be used for the inferential as a contrast between the Seifa and the Reisha. In other words, there were two cases that we discussed. When she becomes a Shaita, he can't divorce her. And when he becomes a Cheresh or a Shaita, he cannot divorce her. Now, the Reisha didn't say the word olamis, but the Seifa did. So says the Gemara, the reason why the Seifa says olamis is to contrast, to tell you that actually the halacha of the Seifa, the reason why it says Olam is like it's something absolute, is because that's a biblical halacha. But it's coming to make the diik that the Reisha is only rabbinic halacha, like Rabbi Yitzchak says, where by the Seifa, it's a biblical halacha because the Megarish, the one who's divorcing, we need his das. Because a man can only divorce according to his willingness. So Cheresh, Shaita, these individuals, they don't have das. That's why he can't divorce for a biblical marriage that he had when he was a Bekech. But the Reisha is different, because the Amr Yitzchak, like Yitzchak said, Dvar Torah, actually according to biblical law, Shaita Miskareshes, a mentally deranged woman could be divorced, even if she was married as a Pekachas. Midi Dhava Pekachas Balkarcha, because there's no difference between a Shaita, a woman that's mentally deranged, and a woman that's fully competent, who's being divorced against her will. Where even though there's no Das over there, there's no intelligence, there's no acquiescence, it doesn't make a difference. But umatam amr ein miskareshes, but says Rabbi Yitzchak, so why did they say that you can't divorce a woman that's a shaita? That's a rabbinic reason. Shalayinugo ba minig hefker, that they shouldn't treat her in an inappropriate hefker, onulous type of a way, because no one's protecting her and she can't protect herself. That's why you can't divorce. So again, there's two answers the Gemara says why it's not a raya from the Mishnah Masechtas Yevamos, like a Abaye tried, indicating that this is the Rabban who disagree with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and that he's always can never divorce his wife, seemingly even through writing, says Rav Papa, no, either it could be coming to indicate, actually, even if he's sharp, but actually if he could write, maybe that would be considered like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that you could divorce, or it's actually coming to make the contrast for the Reisha, that it's telling you that it's a biblical law in contrast to the Reisha, it's only a rabbinic law. But again, since Rav Yechon did have that tradition that it is a machlekes, so therefore the Gemara says that it is a machlekes, but again, no source from the Masechtas Yevamos, and therefore, Rav Kahana Rav Salacha was going like Rav Shimon Gamliel and not like the Rabbanan. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah, regarding when the authority that a husband gives to people to write a get for his wife, and also similar along the theme of the previous Mishnah, where it was a situation of Amrulai, where they tell him and they ask him, and he says yes. So our Mishnah says, Amrulai, if they said to a healthy individual, or even a dying person, as long as he's still intelligent enough to understand what they're asking of him. So if they tell him, Nichtav get le'ishtacha, should we write a get for your wife? In other words, because you're going to die without any children and she shouldn't have to go through the whole Yibam process with your brother. V'amalehen kisuvu, and he tells them, yes, go ahead and write it. Now, these people who had asked him, who now, with his answer, he designated them as the ones to write the get, they went and umrulis seifa v'kasav. So they went and they told to a scribe and he wrote it up. Ula eidim v'chasav, they told witnesses who signed in it. Says the Mishnah, afa pisha kisvu v'chasmu. Now even if they got it written up, they got it signed, v'nesnuhu lo yana, they gave it to him. So here he has a get that was written up. V'chasav v'nosnu lo, and now here that person goes and gives it to his wife. In spite of the fact that everything was done, hari haget batal. The get is batal, it's null, it's void. Why? Because until the husband himself tells to the scribe, Kesayv, write. Ula Edom Chasuma, and to the witnesses to sign, it's not going to be valid. Because here he told them, but they told other people. That is what the Mishnah is saying, that's not valid. He has to tell them directly to go ahead and do it. So even though everything was done halachically sound, since it wasn't by the husband's direct tzivui, his command, it's not going to be valid. Now the Gemara makes an inference regarding a halacha that we had learned on the previous daf in Daf Samach Vav. The Gemara says, Taima, it seems like the reason of our Mishnah is, the loy amar tenu, because the husband didn't say, give it, without the word kisvu. Rather, since he said kisvu, he told them, the ones who asked him, should we write a gift for your wife? And he said, write it. Sounds like that he was particular about that. That is, that they shouldn't tell other people to write it. He only wants them to write it. Now, what would the reason be for that? Because it's embarrassing for him. He doesn't want the word to get out that he doesn't know how to write a get. Because if other people are going to write it, maybe the word's going to get out. You guys, I trust, you could write it. Because even Reb Meir agrees, although it's brought on Daf Samach Vav, that if the words that the husband said to the shluchim, to the edim, is kisvu get le'isht, you write a get for my wife, even if he said this to a court, he did not make them then a court to then, which a court always, you're giving them the authority to delegate to other people. If he said the words kisvu to write it, then they can't give it over to other people. They themselves have to write it. So it sounds like from our Mishnah that the reason is why they themselves have to write it, as we said in the Mishnah, that they can't go ahead and delegate it to other people, is because they said kisvu. He didn't say only tenu, give it. But ha'amar tenu, but the inference of our Mishnah sounds like, but if let's say he said to them that you should give, the word he used was tenu, not kisvu, was to give the get to my wife, and he didn't say the word writing, then nice, then they could tell other people to write it and others, and then they can go ahead and give it because he made them into a court. Now Rashi explains, which will be related to the Gemara's coming discussion, that obviously we have to be talking about that he's telling this to three people. Because if he's telling this to two people, even Reb Meir would agree that even if he didn't say kisvu to write it, rather he used only the word tenu to give it, that they themselves would have to write it. Because this is what we learned on the Mishnah of Samach Vav Mabeis, that if he tells two people tenu get le'ishti, even if he says tenu by two people, or let's say he says to three people, but he says kisvu but tenu get le'ishti, he used the word writing, they themselves have to write it because two people are not a bezdin. So if I'm telling you to give the get, I'm not telling you to delegate it. If you're a bezdin, that could be that I'm coming to delegate it. That's why when, let's say, when he tells three people to new, then they could tell other people to write it and then to give it. Because when you're telling three people to give it, you're telling them in the status of a court, which is what three people are, and then therefore they could delegate it to others. That's the opinion of Reb Meir, which Reb Yossi disagrees on, and he says actually even by three people. Even if he didn't say kisvu, they themselves have to write it, as we explained over the end of Samach Vav. So on that is what our Gemara is coming to say, that our Mishnah that specifically used the term that the husband said to these shluchim, to these edim who wanted to delegate and did delegate to other people, since he used the word kisoibu, go ahead and write it, sounds like that if he didn't say to write it, then actually the get would not be possible. For example, as we just explained, if let's say we'd be telling this to three people, because when you tell three people to new, then they could delegate it to others. That's what it sounds like our Mishnah is going like. And that asked the Gemara Mami. So who's the Tana of our Mishnah? So that's Reb Meir. That's Reb Meir. The Amar Mili Mimser and Lishaleach, that he says that words can be given over to an agent to give over to someone else. In other words, it's common custom that you make someone to be a shliach, not just for an object that's concrete, but even for words to give over to other people, where in that capacity he could also be what's called shliach shaladim kamaisei. He could be an extension of you, the mishaleach, the husband, to tell other people, just like you could tell other people to write a get for you, they could tell other people to write a get for you. And therefore, when there's three people, since you could say that he made them into a bezdin to tell other people, so therefore then actually the halacha of our Mishnah would be that if you told the scribe, if they told the scribe to write and witnesses to sign, it would be valid. The only reason why it's not valid is because he said kisayvu and not tenu. So similarly, our Mishnah is going like Reb Meir. That's from the Reisha, that's from the first halacha of the Mishnah. But to ask the Gemara, Eima Seva, let's see the end of the Mishnah. It concludes, oh no, that case is not valid. Because the Mishnah says, Ad sheyoyim l'seva kasev, until he himself tells the scribe to write, u'leidim chasaymu, and he tells the witnesses to sign. Now, that the Gemara's question is, it sounds like, from the end of the Mishnah, that there is no way to permit telling others, meaning for the people that he told to tell others to write. Rather, only the one that hears it from the husband himself could write it, even if he's telling it to three people, and even if he didn't say the words kisayvu. Because it sounds like, no, he has to tell the people themselves. On that, the Gemara says, Asan Rabbi Yosi, that comes out like Rabbi Yosi. The Amar Mili Laimim Srin L'Shliach, that he says that you cannot create a Shliach to give over to another person words themselves. And that's why you always have to hear directly from the husband. Reish Reb Meir B'Sev Rabbi Yosi, so it sounds like that the beginning of the Mishnah is like one Tana, and the end of the Mishnah is like another Tana, because that's their disagreement if words can be given over to Shliach or not. So the Gemara says, in, yes. Reish Reb Meir B'Sev Rabbi Yosi, the beginning of the Mishnah is like Reb Meir, who holds that, yeah, the only problem is because you said Kisevu, if you said Tanu, actually, then it would be valid in that case, where they themselves went and authorized other people to write it. Whereas the end of the Mishnah, which sounds like, no, they have to hear directly from the husband, is like Rabbi Yosi. Abaye Amar, he says, no. Kul Reb Meir, we could say that the whole Mishnah is Reb Meir. Now, V'hoch Ma'eskinon, so how do we understand the end of the Mishnah that said that until you tell the scribe himself, when we said that seemingly there is a way out, without telling the scribe himself, you could have other people tell other people. The end of the mission is because deloya matnu. It's not talking about that you said the word give without the word to write it. In other words, so this is what the mission is saying according to Abaye. The beginning of the mission opens up the reisha by saying if someone says kisoivu, if he tells these people to write it, it's not valid if they delegate to other people. And that's what the end of the mission says. Unless if he told to the scribe himself the word kisoivu, then it's going to be valid. But you're right, if he said Tanu, then it would be valid even not to describe himself. But that's the Gemara's question. If that's the case, since there is a permitted way to have it not directly to the scribe, even to tell others, so then the Mishnah should have said, no, it's not a get, it should have said until he says to give it without using the word writing, and then you could even have other people telling other people, and then for sure it would be obvious when he tells the scribe himself, write it, of course that's going to be valid. So therefore, rather, the inference of the Gemara's question is that obviously the end of the Mishnah is precisely this, telling us that no, even if he said Tanu, it wouldn't help, meaning it's not like Reb Meir. Because if it would, then say that case, say it's not a get unless you say Tanu. But don't say until you tell the scribe himself, because that's obvious going to be valid. So Ella, rather, Hachamai Skin, the Gemara gives a different approach to say that it could still be like Reb Meir. The Seif is talking about Deloy Omer Lebeit Lassam, when he didn't tell it to three people. He only told it to two. Now, as we mentioned before, Reb Meir agrees when you tell to two people, even if you say Tanu, they themselves have to write it because he didn't make them at their court. So that's why the end of the Mishnah says, since we're talking about two people, you have to tell it to them directly if you want them to do the writing. But for them to tell other people, that wouldn't work when they're two people. Now, the Gemara asks the same type of a question. But if that's the case, then the end of the Mishnah shouldn't have said until you tell directly to the Sefer. No, you could do it even not directly to the Sefer. In other words, doing directly to the Sefer, of course, is going to work. You tell a scribe to write, of course, that's valid. You tell Aiden to sign, of course, it's valid. You should have said until you tell three people, then the ratio would work out, even though they went and hired other people to do it, because that's three people, and Tanu works by three people. But if you're saying it's by two, don't say until you tell the scribe himself. Say until you say it to three people. Say, Elarav, the Gemara says, you're right. We can't say the Mishnah is like Reb Meir, meaning the whole Mishnah. Rather, Kuli Reb Yosi, we'll say the other way. Actually, the whole Mishnah is like Reb Yosi. Now, V'hocha Ma'eskinan, so how do we understand the halacha of the Reisha? So here, what we're talking about in the Reisha is when we said that the problem is because you said Kesevu. So on that, it's not to tell you the inference, as we had assumed in the question, that, oh, because if you said Tanu, to give it without Kesevu, then they actually would be able to tell others to write it. That's not true, because Reb Yosi holds, no, even if you say Tanu, it's not valid. Rather, the reason why it's possible in the Reisha is Deloy Amr Amru, because he didn't tell them to tell other people. In other words, the inference is that because he didn't say to say, that's why it's invalid. But if he told to two people that tell other people to write it and tell those other people to sign it, and then they told the scribe to write and he wrote, and they told the witnesses and they signed, that actually would be valid because Rabbi Yosi agrees in that case because he designated him to be a shliach for that. I'm telling you to tell him. I'm telling you to tell him. That's the case that it's coming to exclude, meaning when he only tells him write, so he told you to write. That's why it's going to be invalid. That cannot be given over to shliach. That's where Rabbi Yosi holds mili lemimsun l'shliach. But it's coming to exclude not the case of Tanu, because Tanu also would be invalid according to Rabbi Yosi. It's actually coming to exclude Aymer Imru if he told them to tell. That is the case that it's saying would be kosher. Now the Gemara asks similar type of questioning on this approach too. If that's the case, so then the end of the Mishnah shouldn't have said, oh, until, so therefore it's not valid until you tell the scribe himself to write. No, should have said, even if you could delegate to other people, but it has to be that you tell him to tell. Don't say until you tell the scribe, because that's the more obvious one. Say that until you tell him to tell, that then it's going to work even according to Rabbi Yosi. V'aid more, but the Gemara asks, we had this discussion on the previous stuff too. Does Rabbi Yisi really agree that when you tell the Shliach to tell someone else, that then you could give over words, that then he could tell someone else to do it? But now we learn the Mishnah Pei Zayin and Beis that will refute this premise. The Mishnah there says, Ksav Seif of Eid Kasher. If you have on the document one witness sign and the writing of the scribe, so the document is going to be Kasher. Seemingly because you have two people that are verifying it, one through the writing that he's described, and the other one through being a witness. Now, Amr B'Yimri comes to explain, he says, no, don't think that the reason why the get is going to be kosher through one signature's signing and the scribe's handwriting itself, so you know there's two people verifying the validity, no. What the Mishnah was saying is, chasam sefer shanina. We were talking about that besides the one witness sign, the scribe himself also signed. So you have two witnesses signing, one by a witness and one that the scribe besides writing it also signed. That's what the Mishnah is saying is kasher. Now on that, V'amar Rav Chisda, he qualified and he said, Masnitin, that Mishnah Pei Zayin, that says it's valid for a scribe to be one of the signatories on a get, and that's how you understand the case, how you have two signatures, one of the scribe and one of someone else, says Rav Chisda Mani, who's that Mishnah going like? So as we continue on top of Ayin Bezim and Alf, says Rav Chisda, it must be Rabbi Yasi, it must be going like Rabbi Yasi. Because according to him, there's no concern for any negative consequences. Why? Because the Amar mili lemimsrin l'shliach. Rabbi Yisi holds that words cannot be given over to a shliach. What does that mean? The explanation is because whereas according to a mayor who holds that when you make a shliach with through words, that shliach could give over those same words of command to someone else to do it, then you're going to run into a problem. What's the concern? Because it could be that the husband told to two people as follows. He said, tell that person to be the scribe. I want him to write the get. Tell those two other people to sign the get. Now, these agents are going to come and they're going to be embarrassed to tell the scribe just to write as if the husband doesn't trust him to sign as if he's not a kosher witness. So, they might end up actually telling, he wanted you to write it and to sign, and they're going to get only one of those other people to sign with him. That's a problem because the husband didn't say that. And if that is, it's actually going to be invalid yet and the woman's going to be marrying someone else, why is she still really married to her first husband? But according to Rabbi Yisi, you don't run into any of those concerns. Why? Because a scribe will not be able to write a get and will not be able to sign on it unless he hears directly from the husband, because Rabbi Yisi says no one can give you over instructions from the husband. You have to hear it straight. Mili le mimsrin l'shliach. Words cannot be given over from one person to the next. And therefore, you're not going to run into the problem. If we see the scribe signed on it, we know that he heard from the husband directly. That's why there's no problem. So you have two kosher witnesses, and it's not like a case where the husband had told someone and he was embarrassed, so he said it can't be such a case. He can't go ahead and give over to someone else what the husband had told him in words. That's what Rav Chisda says. Says the Gemara, V'isal g'day dich maidir b'yisi ba'ayma amru. Now, if you would entertain, as we're trying to explain for Abaya, how the Mishnah could be like one Tana, not like two Tanoim, that the whole Mishnah is like Rabbi Yisi, and how so? Because although the beginning of the Mishnah says kisbu, it's not coming to say but that it would be kosher by tenu, which Rabbi Yisi holds is not kosher, but rather by the case of when he tells them to tell someone else to write it, but nothing minei chorve. Rabbi Yisi holds that you can do that, you can give over words when you expressly tell him to give over the words, then you're going to run into the same disaster that we just described for Reb Meir would apply to Rabbi Yisi too. Because the Zimnin, you're going to have the same thing that we just described. Sometimes the Amud Lishnaim, it could be, it's going to happen a case where the husband's going to tell two people, Imr L'Seif of Yichtav, tell a scribe, that guy, I want him to write, Reuven. Ulaplainu Plainu V'Yichtav, tell Shimon and Levi, I want them to sign. Umishum Kisuv V'Seif, now because the Shliach, the agent of the husband, is going to be embarrassed. He doesn't want to embarrass the scribe. So Chayishi Umachas Milei, so he's going to be concerned. And he's going to have the scribe sign, instead of, let's say, Levi. It's going to be just Reuven, the scribe, and Shimon signing on it. And the husband didn't say this. It's going to be invalid yet because of this problem. Now, if you hold Rabbi Yisi, holds that you could do that, maybe a scribe would sign, even though he didn't hear directly from the husband, because, maybe the husband told him to tell, which that does work. Imru works. Rather, it's clear that Rabbi Yisi does not hold up Imru, and that's why that Mishnah in Pei Zayin is going like Rabbi Yisi, where you're not running into those concerns. So therefore, the ratio of the Mishnah doesn't make sense to say it's like Rabbi Yisi, because the case of Kesoibu cannot be coming to say Tanu, where for sure Rabbi Yisi holds is not valid, and neither Imru Imru, because that he also holds not valid. So rather, ratio of Meir is a save Rabbi Yisi. Must be the ratio is like Rabbi Meir, and the save is like Rabbi Yisi, as we said before. So we remain still with that first answer of the Gemara. But Rav Ashi, he actually says, no, I could say Kul Rabbi Yisi. that the whole Mishnah is like Rabbi Yosi. Now, but then you run into the problem we said, but the ratio that says that when is it possible because the husband said to write, so that says Rav Ashi, no, that's not necessarily to say that because he said to write. Actually, it's even if he said to give this get to my wife, it would still be possible. Because yes, like it says at the end of the Mishnah, until you tell the scribe himself to write it, it's not going to be valid. You can never have given over from one person to the next. Words has to go direct. Now, but then, so why did the Rishon Mishnah say Kesayvu? If that's the lower level Chedesh, I should have said Tanu or Oyma Imbu. So that's where Ravashi is coming to answer, that that's the normative way of a Tana, where he starts off with the lower one and he goes greater and greater Chedushim, and in this way of what's called Loy Mebaya, where it's, I don't even have to tell you this, that not only this, but even that and that and that. So that's what Rashi explains was what Rabbi Yisi, who was the Tana of the Mishnah, was saying. And that is, B'loy me'boye kama. He was telling you what's unnecessary first. And that is, loy me'boye heichid loy amatanu. I don't have to tell you when he didn't say to them to give, which was the case of the Mishnah when he said kesevu to write, which is the ratio of the Mishnah. For sure that's going to be possible. Ela filo amatanu loy. But what he was inferring was that even if he said to give it, it wouldn't work. And b'loy me'boye heichid loy amal le'beit losa. And I don't have to tell you that's not going to work when he doesn't tell it to three people, where they're not even the Bezdin. That even if he tells it to three people, it's not going to work. In other words, these are all contrasting what he disputes with Remeir, because Remeir holds that it does work when he says to no, and it does work if there are three people. So I don't have to tell you that what I'm telling you is not good, because even what the other case is not good. And I don't have to tell you that it's not going to work where he doesn't tell them to tell. But even when he says to tell over to someone else, even that's not going to work, which is what the Sefer of the Mishnah ends off by saying, because you got to tell it to him directly. Can never go ahead and give it over, and therefore we could say that the whole Mishnah is like a B.A.C. Now, the Gemara concludes, Tanika Vaseh the Ravashi. We actually have a Bryce that says, Ravashi, where, as was proven from seemingly from the Mishnah Pei Zion, that by Omer Imru, Rabbi Yosi also holds his puzzle. And that is, you can't say the ratio of the Mishnah is like Rabbi Yisi in that way. He says it's Rabbi Yisi because, oh, Kesayvu, I don't have to tell you Kesayvu. But to make the inference that Imur would be kosher, that we see from a Braisa clearly that Rabbi Yisi does not hold its kosher even when he tells them to tell. Because the Braisa says, Kasav Seifu Lishma. Let's say the scribe wrote the get for the namesake of this woman that's being divorced, which is a necessity for the halach of Gittin. And the Chasam Eidim Lishma, the Eidim, the witnesses, signed it for the namesake of this woman. Everything's so far kosher. Says the Braisa, even though they wrote and they signed and they gave it to the husband, and then he gave it to the woman, the get is void. Why? Because they can't just go ahead and write a get for a husband and then they give it to him and he says, oh, this is great, I can use this and then use it. No, because they could only write it until they hear his voice. That he told them to write. And that he told witnesses to sign. So what's the right to Rav Ashi? He says the Gemara, because there's two words over here that are very important words. There was the word Yishmu'u Koyler, until they hear his voice. The word of the Braisa Yishmu, until they hear from him, that's Lafuke Mimanda Amma Moid Rabbi Yisi Ba'ayma Amru. That comes to exclude from the one who says, Rabbi Yisi agrees that when the husband tells one person to tell someone else that's going to work, that's what you see from the Braisa like Rav Ashi, that no, they have to hear from him, not from someone else who heard from him. And also the word Koyler, that they have to hear his voice, that's Lafukim and Rav Kahana Marav, that comes to exclude from the Aloha that we started off on Daf Ein Alf and Alf on this Daf, that Rav Kahana had said the name of Rav, which again was going like the opinion of Rav Shemingam Liel, which here in this price we see not like that opinion, which we said that's Machlekes Tanoim, where Rav Kahana said that a Cheirish, that although he can't talk, but he could communicate through writing, then we consider him like a Bekech and he could still divorce, that he said that you could write and give a get to the wife. Here from this braisa, we see not like that halacha, because you have to be able to hear koyloi. You have to be able to hear his voice, not through his writing. And therefore, this Tana, A, is coming to exclude from, is coming to support the halacha of Rav Ashi, not like those who hold Rav Yisi agrees by Oyma Amru. And also, it's excluding from the opinion of Rakan Marav, who holds that even if he can't use his voice, but if he's still sane enough to still communicate through writing, that's going to be valid. From this braisa, you see, not like that.